All right. Welcome one and all to the greatest show on earth. Is that too much? Is that over-exaggerating a little bit, maybe?
I think you might be under-exaggerating, actually, Michael.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Those are the best words I could use at this point in this day. I've had very little coffee. Wow. So welcome to the Practice Mechanics Podcast. My name is Rob Pape, and my good friend and colleague and partner here is Mike Massey. I got that all backwards, didn't I? That's how long it's been, right? Who are I? Who are you? Who are we? All right. Gentle reminder, www.practice-mechanics.com, our little outpost in the cyberwebs to help people if you need it. We'll give you the commercial on that later, but welcome anyway. It's been a long time, as Led Zeppelin would say, since we have rock and rolled.
Damn.
So here we are, though. Here we are again, number 13, as we would call it. We don't count, well, 12 was in two pieces, so we don't count the two pieces separately. So literally, this is number 13 of a whole podcast.
How long has it been? When did we do our last one?
I don't know. A long time ago. That's the best I've got for you.
Could have been a week, could have been a month, could have been a year.
Yeah, I mean, time is a flat circle these days, you know?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. Just slide around on the circle.
Yeah. And wherever it stops, nobody knows.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where the podcast pops up.
Yeah. Just like playing Twister in Jello on a moving flat circle. That's time nowadays.
That is trippy. That's super trippy. So let's reflect a moment if we could.
Yes.
12 previous podcasts. We covered a lot of ground, said a lot of things. We shared a lot of thoughts.
We talked to some nice people.
We like to believe these were meaningful thoughts, but I don't think they all probably were. But, you know, who can have 100% meaningful thoughts? I think that's an impossible task, right?
I feel like our meaningful thought average is pretty high, though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we have to think that or else we're talking to space.
Right? I mean, I think.
But we did have some good great guests, actually. A lot of variety, a lot of different personalities from different places and different angles of our profession. Mm-hmm. We were very fortunate to have who we'd had, and we're going to have some more in the future, too. So, yeah, that was super cool. So I hereby declare the end of the sabbatical.
Done.
I mean, I think if I had a trumpet, I would play it right now. So, yeah. Any reflections before we move forward, Rob, on all the previous 12?
No, because it happened so long ago that I can't remember any of them because I'm
like in the gumball rally, rip off the rearview mirror because what's behind us is not important.
Just keep moving forward, Mike.
I'll never forget that line. Yes.
Don't look back.
Onward. So the time down, the downtime has probably been good for everybody, us and our listeners included. but it has probably been good to clear the mind, don't you think?
Sure.
The mind.
Sure.
We've exposed ourselves to different evolving things, emerging information, ideas. Stuff's happening in our profession. Stuff's happening in the research world. Stuff's happening in the healthcare world. You and I both had experiences during that time that probably be worth sharing during all this mess as we start to do these things again. I mean, specifically, the one thing I think is probably close to both of us to some degree is the long effects of COVID. Now that we've been out of some of that stuff for long enough to get long COVID people, that's really opening us to some interesting perspectives and some consistencies among patients that are worth discussing at some point, too.
Sure. I think that would be that would add to our average in a positive way.
More good thoughts. Is that what you're saying? More meaningful thought.
Meaningful thought. Average. MTA, baby.
So this episode, to cut to the chase, we've decided to dedicate it to the subject of the exciting and riveting subject of care planning. And it does sound kind of nerdish at first, but you know, it's a hot topic. It's a broad heading. It includes things like meaningful goal setting and patient engagement and outcome assessment tools and things like that. And again, people start to snooze when you start talking about things like that. But it's come to the forefront for a lot of different reasons. One is payers are asking more of us, strangely enough, and giving less. But things I've been exposed to, they're calling for more detail and more clarity on what we're trying to accomplish. I mean, we've had issues long term. I mean, I won't speak for you, but I think I can in some ways, that our training left us a little empty in how to plan patient care. I mean, I left school feeling like I knew how to analyze people to some degree, or at least evaluate them. I knew kind of how to treat them. I mean, as far as technique and skill and approach and palpation and that kind of thing. But nobody really ever talked to us in school about what they call dosing. How long do you treat a patient? How do you know how long to treat a patient? How do you tell them how long their care is going to last? How do you sort of plan for those kind of things? That they just tossed us out in the world with none of that. Mm-hmm. And so then we were stuck with what, practice management groups and hearsay. Those are the two things that built our care planning acumen. I mean, that's where it comes from. I mean, some of that is just, we're not really poorly trained to do it, and we're being asked to do things we're not really well trained to do. So also there's literature out there. Literature has been out there for a while that nobody really cared about until now. Some of the guidelines and the care planning tools and the algorithms and things like that. Mm-hmm. They've been out there for years. You know, I'm talking short history, you know, 2006, I think, is the oldest one that I saw this morning when I looked for one. And as recently as 2012 and 2016, there's some new stuff out there, but it's all from good, reliable sources. It's not from somebody trying to rivet us down and overmanage us. It's actually giving us tools to make good thought processes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the way I look at algorithms, is it's not a cookbook. It's a way of training your mind to look at cases in a flow, you know, mm-hmm. and how to manage them, how to think about them at certain stages and how to progress instead of just sort of playing it by ear.
Yeah. You know? I like
there are guidelines out there. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I like the words thought framework personally.
Yeah.
And that's what you're describing here. It's funny how we resist these things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, nature of the beast to some degree, you know, we are an independent, weird bunch of people, or we wouldn't have been doing what we're doing as a profession to begin with. Yeah. We didn't come into this unnaturally. We were led here because we're weird.
Especially if you're going to be in the insurance world, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that adds another layer of weirdness.
You're not independent anymore.
Nope.
You know, if you're a schmuck like me, you know, outside the insurance world, you have a little more leeway. But if you want to get paid by insurance companies and you're in that world, you kind of got to play.
Yeah, but even then, case management. Case management is case management, right?
Absolutely.
Regardless of who's paying the bill.
You know, I agree with you. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
The master motivator for patients is pain, and the master motivator for a lot of chiropractors is money. That's just that's just the reality. Nobody's showing up to practice every day. Maybe there are. Maybe there are people who are independently wealthy who show up to practice every day and don't need the money. That would be cool. I'd love that personally.
I'd like to meet that guy.
If somebody, I think I'm going to start a Patreon for that. That'd be perfect, actually.
Yeah, let independent people pay you to go to work for free.
That would be cool.
I think that's a cool concept.
I'd be totally into that.
I mean, nothing's out of the question anymore. I mean, I've seen all kinds of people getting paid for all kinds of things online these days.
Seriously. Oof. Yeah. I mean, I would show up and do this job every day because I love doing it. It's my hobby.
Oh, yeah.
It's what I do. But, you know, it's not that way for everyone. So.
Sure. I mean, we talk about it at the office all the time. I mean, I'm 31 years into the same office and practice, and I'm as busy as I've ever been. And I don't like it any less today than I did when I first started. In fact, I probably like it more because I feel like I'm better at it now. You know? And I think, you know, this knowledge is wasted on an old dude like me. I wish I was this smart long ago. I would have been retired by now.
So are they teaching this stuff in school then, Mike? I mean, because we oldsters did not get it in school. But then again, back then, so many things were different.
I think it depends. I've asked a lot of students, and I've asked a lot of new graduates, and you know, they come out with varying levels of confidence in a lot of this stuff.
Okay.
A lot of them feel just like I did and you did, that, hey, I know how to adjust somebody. I know when to adjust somebody. I know when not to adjust somebody, but I don't know how to plan their course of action, their course of care. Mm-hmm. And when do we initiate rehab, and when do we tell them to go away, and when does it turn to maintenance, and when do we stop? You know, when do we understand that there's a plateau? Those kind of things. Those are things we've got to talk about. But those are the things I think everybody kind of feels, you know, less equipped to do mm-hmm. or to understand. And I think also the established docs out there learned it a certain way, and they're not really eager to rock that boat, because 3 times a week for 3 weeks and 2 times a week for 3 weeks and 1 time a week for 4 weeks is so easy. Mm-hmm. It makes zero sense anymore if you look back at it. Mm-hmm. But that's how we learned it. It's worked for us. It's made us money. It's made us happy patients for the most part. So nobody wants to talk about realism. They want to talk about, you know, tradition, traditional. That's the way we've done it. So we're not going to change, you know, and that's frustrating too, because that's what's gotten us into some of the issues we have with payers, as you speak about, is doing the same old thing without any regard to current data or current guidelines or anything like that, or, you know, considering the patient's outcomes, that kind of thing. It's just going to be, I've set this thing in stone for every patient that walks through the door, regardless of condition or response, you're going to be treated, you know, 18 times over 6 weeks, whether you like it or not, whether you progress or not, whether you're well or not. Yeah. And then we go from there and hope it continues.
I mean, from my standpoint, it's the lack of reevaluation throughout, mm-hmm. meaningful reevaluation throughout. The meaningful meaning in this sense, describing what's meaningful to the patient, what's meaningful to the client, what's meaningful to the practice member, if you will, rather than x-rays or scans or things that don't necessarily correlate with what brought, they didn't come into your office to get x-ray changes. They didn't come into your office to get scan changes. They came into your office because they had a problem and they want that problem solved. And there's really good information on how to address that in terms of motivating them and then, you know, and seeing them, communicating with them, letting that be your guide. So yeah, man, I'm glad we're talking about this, because hopefully we can get one or two people to move in a better direction.
Well, and I'll go on a teeny tiny side tangent, and I'll tell you who does this good, does this well. PTs. If you looked at PT records, they set goals right out of the bat. They monitor their goals with numbers. They reeval regularly, mm-hmm. And they report that kind of stuff, and they manage it based on what's improving, what's not improving. Right. You know, what's improving, they kind of set aside, and what's not improving, they focus again, and they go at it again. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
And that's... people don't want to hear that in our profession, but we could learn from them in that regard, because they were trained that way. We were not.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to change. And we talked about that, but
yeah, if you're going to stay within the sort of X number of visits over X number of weeks sort of paradigm, mm-hmm. it becomes absolutely crucial that you have something measurable to show for change during that time.
That's the word we want to hear, is measurable stuff, because that's what's the most meaningful.
Yeah. And yeah, right. What's the most meaningful thing that to the patient that you can measure in these scenarios? You know, it's not rocket science, is it?
Right. And that's what I was going to say. You know, I was asked last week by a semi-new graduate, how do you set a care plan? You know, how do you know? And I'm like, well, it's hard to say this, but experience helps, you know, because you know mm-hmm. how people respond. Yep. But even then, there's no way to know. Every person's different. There's no way to know when that person walks in the door exactly how they're going to respond. You just have to literally, you know, spoiler alert, it's a guess. You're guessing based on what limited experience and education you have. And nobody's expecting you to guess right. They just want you to have some sort of plan, you know. People get really wound up on, well, what if I say it's, you know, I need to see them for 3 weeks and they're not well in 3 weeks. I'm like, you tried, you know, that was your aiming point. They might get better faster, and that's good too. You celebrate that. But if they don't, then you got to figure out why, and you got to talk about it, you know?
Yeah. And this is the doctoring, right? Like at the end of the day, this is the art of being a practitioner. How well can you evaluate something that's meaningful? And how well can you pivot when your current approach is not creating meaningful change?
Yeah. And I jotted down a couple notes you know, about what, you know, how to answer that question when it comes up again. I mean, number one is the patient's condition. Mm-hmm. People present differently. Not everybody's an acute, aggressive, you know, something mm-hmm. that needs a whole bunch of, you know, post, you know, injury care or whatever. Somebody just wants to come in and get some wellness. They're not going to be on the same doggone care plan as somebody who come in, broke down and carried in. There are guidelines, you know, there's old guidelines like Mercy, but they still give some guidance. Mm-hmm. Some of the newer ones like ACOEM and ODG may be a little bit restricted, but at least that's something you can play off of. And again, you got these algorithms that are helpful to help you guide yourself if you feel unconfident. Mm-hmm. But even if you're confident, I think people don't need to be too proud to look at the algorithms and see if they're managing care, you know, within a reasonable framework.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, again, experience is part of it. The more people you see, the more accurately, but still not completely accurately, but the more accurately you can sort of determine how they're going to respond a lot of times. And the big thing is how they respond, literally.
That's it.
Your planning has to be fluid based on the patient's response.
Response to care is everything.
Tracking the measurables, you know, things. And it doesn't have to be number. I mean, I love numbers because numbers are objective, you know.
Yeah.
But things like activities of daily living. You know, what can the person not do right now that they want to and expect to do?
Yeah.
I mean, you're not trying to make a superhuman out of the person. They just want to get back to normal life.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that normal life thing that they can't do or not do as well? You can monitor that over time.
Yeah.
You know, things like walking, standing, working, you know, riding in the car, whatever. You know, how long can you do that without pain? And monitor those over time. Those are meaningful to patients.
Absolutely.
You know, or what are you avoiding because you hurt? You know, what activity can you not do because you're afraid to, you know, fear avoidance kind of thing. What, how do you get back into that? And how are you responding into that? That's how you manage the case. That's how you know how to plan.
Yep.
It's all those kind of things. It's fine and it's dandy. It's equitable. It's meaningful to set short and long-term goals.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to be careful about that too. Some of that's just words. Literally just words.
Yeah.
But the meaningful thing that I see most people doing is omitting the patient from that process.
Mm-hmm.
The doctors have goals. They have a timeline, mm-hmm. but they don't stop, like I said before, and ask the patient, what is meaningful to you? What are you trying to do? What are your goals?
Yep.
And what are your expectations? And we got to gain towards that because you can have all the goals you want to. If it's not the patient's goal, you're never getting there. I don't care what you say.
Yeah.
So. I've babbled long enough. What do you got to say about some of that stuff? Anything?
Well, you know, like we come from vitalistic schools, right? Where the mantras tended to be just adjust. We're not concerned about pain. We're not chasing symptoms. And my answer to that is symptoms are literally dis-ease, right? Like dis-ease is the whole point. We're trying to serve the person who came in and the reason why they came in, which in 95% of cases is some sort of musculoskeletal discomfort or dis-ease, right? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know where the vitalistic schools got off track with saying that pain or symptoms or lack of function were signs of disease.
Right.
Like, we got to go back a step to me and say, we've sort of lost the script if we're not including this in our evaluation. I mean, even if you're just a vitalistic chiropractor and you're looking at quote unquote nerve flow, how do you leave this stuff out? I don't get it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I suppose some things. I think pain is easier to get rid of. And so there's a fear that when you get rid of the pain, the patient disappears. So we don't want to talk about that as the lone determining factor of success.
Sure, you know? Sure.
But you can still not focus on pain and still have a successful practice, you know,
sure.
Because like you said, there's more objective things to monitor over time.
Yep.
Than just the pain. You know, just because you're out of pain does not mean you're out of problem.
Nope.
How are you functioning? How are you able to do the things?
Yes.
But people miss that piece that's very valuable and could fit in any kind of care paradigm, really.
Yep.
But they just won't allow it. It's just sort of a, you know, I don't know. I don't know. Square peg in a round hole or something. I don't know. It's so crazy.
And it comes down to realizing that function is a sign. Like if we go back again to the vitalist, function is how you can tell innate intelligence is moving through your system, right? If we want to mm-hmm. get really vitalistic about it.
Right.
How, you know, how somebody squats or reaches overhead or is able to bend forward or is able to hold bird dog or is able to get up from sitting, you know, a million different things. Any sort of movement is a test of function, and function is a function.
Sure.
Of, sure. In this case, if we're going to talk about it in this vitalistic way, of innate intelligence getting to the muscular end organ, right? So, I mean, like, I know we shared this, we've talked about this before. If you look at BJ Palmer's clinic, he had a whole gym. Yep. He had a huge space dedicated to movement. Like, he realized, I don't know where that got lost in our history, but the dude realized that what he was freeing up was allowing people to move differently, and he was measuring that stuff. You wouldn't have all that equipment otherwise, right? Yep. If you've never seen this, Google BJ Palmer rehab room or exercise room. It's especially for the time, what a mm-hmm. well-equipped space. My goodness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Dude was way ahead of his time.
Lost in the archives, man.
Yeah. And lost to our profession.
We can't talk about that.
Lost to our profession, yeah. Which leaves us with a huge blind spot. And that blind spot leads us to what you're discussing, the problem that you're bringing up today around care planning, to me, from my standpoint.
Yeah. So we got help, you know, we've got, like I said, we can set goals that are short-term and long-term. Short-term is the most meaningful. Nobody has a crystal ball that goes beyond a couple of weeks. I don't care how experienced and how educated you are.
Okay.
Patients just respond differently, I think. I mean, that's been sure. my experience, and it's been most people I talk to's experience is 2 weeks is your short-term planning.
Yep.
You know, and that's where your trial of cares. You hear people say you got to do a trial of care.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. max that out at a couple of weeks, because a trial of care is not 4 weeks and see what happened in retrospect.
I mean, geez, let's face it, 4 weeks for a lot of our profession would be a big improvement over the 3 months, six yeah. months, year,
yeah.
you know, plans yeah. that they're having people sign up for.
But think about it, with regularity, the work you can get done in 12 visits in 4 weeks, you know, and that's two back-to-back 2-week trials.
Yeah.
And that's most of the guidelines are liberal enough to give you that. They're sure not giving you 6 months to figure it out, you know. You should know something in 4 weeks, whether that patient's responding to your care or not.
Yeah, 4 weeks is more than enough time to move the needle. And if you haven't.
And then I'm not saying that's the end. I'm not saying that's the end.
No, you got to be able to.
That's where you should find some measurable, you know, monitoring these measurable things. Yeah. There should be some change. If you're not measuring change in 4 weeks, punt. You know, you're not doing your job, or they're not fixable. You know, one or the other.
Right.
You may be doing your best efforts and they're just not going to respond. And that's, you got to recognize that too.
Right. Right. I mean,
you don't have to always be a hero.
That's it. Well, and you know, I keep coming back to the vitalist because I'm focused on this right now because I'm putting together a course for Life West. But even the 33 principles have some, you know, explanation of that. Like people, they talk about limitations of matter.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, even if you fully believe that your adjustments are going to free up nerve flow and innate intelligence is going to be unleashed, there can be reasons why that innate intelligence gets blocked again, right? Yep. And if you're not assessing for this as you go along, then you're actually cheating your patient or your client or your practice member. In my mind, you're cheating them. End of the day.
So yeah, my recommendations, you know, for starting a brand new patient is establish yourself a short-term trial of care. Mm-hmm. I usually say, I tell my patients 2 weeks. I'm not against somebody saying 4 because that gives them the maximum latitude.
Sure.
And that's okay, I guess, based on guidelines. But that's really stretching them and using them to the most liberal interpretation.
Sure.
But do that. You can still talk about short and long-term goals. You can say, okay, within these 2 weeks, I expect you to be a little bit improved. You don't have to be right. Like I said before, you know, you get to the end of those 2 weeks and the person's either way better or not so good. Then you stop and reevaluate and have a discussion. Okay, you're doing way better. This is, you know, unfolding way better than I thought. So we'll monitor you and we will unfold this care plan a little differently. Or, hey, we're not getting the response we need. We need to see why. We need to do something different. We need to add something. We need to subtract something. Let's go another 2 weeks with an altered approach and see how that goes. And then you reevaluate it. Your long-term goals can be very lofty, as they should. You don't have to be right about them either, you know, but you could set them out for 4 to 6 weeks even and say, you know, by the time this period of time lapses, my expectations for your improvement are way higher. You know, you should be 75 to 100% improved based on, I'm throwing these numbers out, excuse me, as an example.
Sure.
You know, some people will be sooner and some will be longer. Some will be not maximally improved, but, you know, it's based on, again, the presentation, the response. Yes. But, and those things are fluid. They're still fluid. Along the way, you can change your goals. You can change your timeline based on response or lack of. People think that you lock the thing in, you got to match it or you're going to fail. You know, it's not like that.
Yeah.
You're not making a promise. You're just making a goal. And goals, you know, you've heard of lifestyle goals, you know, SMART goals, specific, measurable, attainable, reproducible, all that kind of stuff. These should be no different. Nope. You know, when you're setting goals for your patient, they should be, you know, specific and measurable, attainable, you know, repeatable. So, and I think all those kind of things still apply to the goals you set for your patients, where people just kind of talk about, you need to be out of pain or you need to be at maximum function or whatever.
Yeah. Going back to that function thing, like setting a baseline of function, right? Which oftentimes will be, what can't you do? What is this keeping you from doing?
Yep.
Show me. Let's look at this. And, you know, it might be one, I like to have two things, one thing that they bring to me, and then one thing that I find in their system, some sort of data point, whether it's movement based, either active or passive, could be palpation based. That is the other thing I track for this 2 week period. I need both of those things to get better. If they don't get better, then I have something that they can participate in with me equally, and they can tell me how these things are going. And they know what we're looking for. It's not a mystery.
Right.
It's not where the lines get drawn on the reevaluative x-rays. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And again, that's where you bring them into the picture.
Yeah.
Those are not your goals. They're everybody's goals. They're a joint teamwork kind of thing goals.
Yes.
You know, I boil it down to three things. I boil it down to pain, function, and function means a lot of things. You know, your objective movements, your performance at something, your outcome assessment tools, you know, are those numbers getting better? And the ADLs, you know, we talked about ADLs and that's a very broad thing too, but again, what can you do and what can you not do? And are you doing it better now over time than before? That's how you know they're making progress. If those things are not moving the needle, like you said, you got to reassess. You either got to figure out something different to do or somebody different to engage, you know, to get this person to where they need to be.
That's real. Yeah. And that's it. Like, I guess they're not teaching this in schools. You know, this sort of makes me think of test, treat, retest. And, you know, if you don't like the word treat because it doesn't fit your paradigm, test, adjust, retest.
Yeah.
Test, care, retest, whatever word you put in there.
Yeah. You know, I'm tainted a little bit because I've reviewed a lot of auto accident records, treatment records from chiropractors lately, and there is none of that. There is treat until we maximally can drain this, you know, policy. I don't care how you're doing. You know, if you're not doing well, we're just going to keep adding more things, you know, instead of changing what we're doing and drag it on out. I mean, I've seen people go on for months and months and not really get any kind of improvement. And then they'll release them, but not before they've run up a $12,000 bill, you know.
Yeah,
which is really a crime to me.
Yeah. Well, those folks,
which comes to you,
those folks ain't going to be listening to us. So
nope, they're not here today.
If you're listening to us, pretty sure you're not one of those folks.
You've turned it off by now.
Yeah, you've already decided that we are not people you want to listen to.
But that draws it down to, how do you get rid of somebody? Or, no, that's a really bad way to say it. When do you finish with a patient? When do you terminate their care?
Sure.
You know, not everybody knows how to do that either, gracefully.
Yes.
You know, they just treat them until they quit coming or their policy runs out. That's what it usually ends up being. But, you know, systematically speaking, a care plateau, you have to recognize when that happens,
mm-hmm.
that they're as good as they're going to get, no matter what you do. You know, you can withdraw from care and see if they get worse. And if they don't, but they're not getting any better from what you're doing, or they've reached a maximum level, you got to talk about release.
Yep.
Or failure to respond is the other end of that spectrum. You get to the end of two different trial periods and you've tried everything you can try and the person just not responding. More care is not likely to make them better after that point.
And not from you, anyways. Yeah.
Suck up your pride and let somebody else take a look, the way I look at it. That's oversimplification of both of those for me, but that's the deal.
Well, and hopefully you have some meaningful information that you've gathered along the way during these, you know, these 4 weeks that will help you help the patient know where to go next, right?
Like, right. Yeah.
If you don't understand where you fit within sort of the greater healthcare system, what you do, where it begins, where it ends, and what other people do and what, you know, how they might be able to help in certain scenarios. If you haven't figured out what kind of scenarios in front of you in those 4 weeks, then I'd also say that you have to upskill. Like, you have to figure out how to better assess people so that you know better what they need, not just when you're doing well, but especially when you're not doing well, in terms of moving the needle on their goals, your goals with them.
Yeah, I agree. And we blew through that really quickly. And one last thing I want to mention before we have to close is the move to wellness or maintenance. You know, I don't think we should be ashamed of doing that.
Hell no.
And it used to be something, you know, I think it's gone both ways. It has with me anyway. Like, at first I really was a advocate and a preacher of it all. And I was always saying, yeah, once you get through this all, you're going to go to maintenance. You're going to move to wellness. You're going to be here every once in a while. And then over time I started feeling like I'd hear that in the back of my head. Once you go to the chiropractor, you never get stopped. And I hated hearing that because I feel like that's where that came from.
Yes.
So I quit really emphasizing that until I started seeing more patients that actually asked for it and who actually committed to it and who did really well doing it. And also we finally got some data. We got some literature from Europe that says when people go often or go regularly, they spend less money, have less downtime, and have less overall health issues. You know, so now I'm all about it again, you know, and I think we all should be, that maintenance is a very valuable tool.
Yes.
And we shouldn't be ashamed of it. And we should encourage people to have maintenance care.
Absolutely. Without a doubt.
That's my feeling.
Yep. I do too. I think I also took a pause on that to assess it. Like when the evidence-based chiropractic movement started to move forward strongly, it made me reevaluate maintenance for a minute. It wasn't that I wasn't doing it. I was just looking at it differently. It's like I was scrutinizing it. Like, is this actually valuable? Am I missing who it's valuable for? Blah, blah, blah. And it's not for everyone. Not everybody gets benefit from it, but a lot of people do, especially people who've had chronic or episodic issues over a number of years. Those folks do really well. And quite honestly, the more you get to know them and their bodies and what their normal is when they're doing well, when they're functioning well, when innate intelligence is less impeded, then you can be a barometer for them so that you can pick up small things before they become big things. Or you can pick up something that's big that they may never even consider. Like, I like this story where I had a maintenance care client who came in. I hadn't seen her in about a month. She came in and her neuromuscular patterning was totally different. And she was having symptoms that were totally different than anything we'd seen before. And I couldn't move the needle with my hands. And so you start asking questions because you know this person, you have a relationship with them. What's going on? What has happened in this last since I've seen you? Anything new, anything big? And what finally came out, what she finally realized is, oh yeah, I had an IUD placed and it was really uncomfortable. And so she had to go and get that resolved. There was no way I was going to adjust that out of her. You know what I mean? Like, highly unlikely anyways. that's a great example from my standpoint. That's what I tell people, like maintenance care matters in this context too.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
We covered a lot in a really short period of time. I think we need to wrap it up before we get wrapped up.
Yeah, we're going to get wrapped.
Yeah. Thank you for this. It's been fun to get back at this again.
Yeah, man.
Reminder of what we're doing, what we are. Like I said, www.practice-mechanics.com. We still have our COVID special going on, and I'm not sure how long that's going to last. I guess it's until we turn it off, or if we're appreciating either
coming up soon,
our potential clients for the economy being sour, or ourselves. It depends on how we're going to go with this and how long it will stay. Right. But please check us out if you want to. Final words, Rob?
No, I have no final words.
Wow, that's great. Well, thank you again for being here. Thank you guys for listening. If you made it this long, we appreciate you and look forward to serving you again.